Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English. We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world.
First, Katie Weaver has the latest news on President Barack Obama's visit to the island nation of Cuba.
American President Barack Obama and Cuba's President Raúl Castro disagreed over questions on human rights and Guantanamo Bay in a rare and at times tension-filled press conference in Havana. The two presidents met at the Revolutionary Palace before facing the media. They talked about ways to move toward normal ties between their countries. The discussion included issues on which they disagree, including individual freedoms. To a question about human rights in Cuba during the press conference, President Obama said, "I've met with people who have been subject to arbitrary detention, and that's something that I generally have to speak on because I hear from them directly and I know what it means for them." President Castro told reporters that he welcomed U.S. action to ease trade and travel restrictions. But he also said the 55-year trade embargo against Cuba must end. And the leader called on the U.S. to return Cuban territory used for the U.S. naval base at Guantanamo Bay. President Obama said the trade embargo did not serve the interests of either country. "The embargo's going to end," he said, although he admitted he could not be entirely sure when it would happen. Only the U.S. Congress can end the trade embargo on Cuba. There is Republican opposition in Congress on Obama's policy shift from isolation to engagement with Cuba. Three reporters were permitted to ask questions, although Castro said he would answer only one. All asked him about political prisoners in Cuba. Castro also disputed the general idea of human rights problems in Cuba. He argued that no country in the world honors all 61 internationally recognized human rights. He said Cuba honors many, including the right to education, the right to health care, and the right to equal pay for equal work for everyone. I'm Katie Weaver.
President Dilma Rousseff faces a political crisis as a Supreme Court justice has blocked her cabinet appointment and the majority of Brazilians support her impeachment. On Friday, Justice Gilmar Mendes blocked the appointment of former President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva after he was sworn in as Rousseff's chief of staff. The decision permits a federal judge to continue the investigation against Da Silva. Rousseff's opponents say she is trying to help Da Silva, her one-time mentor. Under Brazilian law, cabinet-level members cannot be investigated, charged, or jailed except with the authorization of the Supreme Court. The president has insisted the appointment is not linked to Da Silva's legal problems. She says Da Silva could help put the country back on track economically. She also says he could help fight attempts to oust her over accusations of financial mismanagement. Officials are investigating Hussefi and her Workers' Party for their part in the corruption scandal at state oil company Petrobras. Prosecutors said more than $2 billion was paid in bribes and other funds by construction and engineering companies in exchange for inflated Petrobras contracts. Both Hussefi and Da Silva have repeatedly denied any wrongdoing. But Hussefi has seen her popularity drop sharply. A new poll released on Sunday showed strong support for Hussefi's impeachment. The poll says 68% of Brazilians surveyed want lawmakers to impeach Hussefi. The effort to impeach the president moved forward last week when the parliament's lower house created a special commission to look into accusations of financial mismanagement. Nearly 2 weeks ago, an estimated 3 million people took to the streets in nationwide anti-government demonstrations. Protests also took place Thursday in Brasilia and Sao Paulo, where demonstrators showed dolls of Da Silva in black and white prison stripes. Brazil faces more problems beyond the Petrobras corruption investigation. The country is the center of the worldwide spread of the Zika virus, which scientists say can lead to birth defects. And it is facing a recession while preparing for the Summer Olympics in Rio de Janeiro in August. Islamic State militants have controlled the small Iraqi village of Bashir for 2 years. Iraqi officials say Islamic State is using the village to mount attacks on nearby towns. Bruce Alpert has the report.
The village of Bashir is 25 kilometers south of the city of Kirkuk. The village is home to a minority group of Shiite Turkmen. IS has controlled the village since 2014. Iraqi government officials say IS uses Bashir to launch deadly rocket attacks on nearby towns, including a chemical attack on the town of Tassa Hormato earlier this month. Town officials reported 3 deaths and many injuries. The rocket spread a garlicky smell and caused nausea and vomiting, said Soren Jalel, the civil defense head. He told VOA that investigators confirmed IS rockets carried mustard gas and came from Bashir. Kurdish forces and the Popular Mobilization Forces, a Shiite militia, are surrounding Bashir. Kurdish Major General Westa Razul said IS control over Bashir is a big threat. He said the village is close to the North Oil Company and a power plant that provides 1/3 of Iraq's electricity. Recently, hundreds of protesters from Bashir blocked Iraq's main highway. The protesters demanded removal of Islamic State fighters from Bashir. Iraqi and Kurdish officials say they need air support from coalition forces to remove IS extremists from the village. It is difficult without air support because of numerous mines and explosives planted around the village. But a coalition of Western governments, including the U.S. and Britain, worry about helping the PMF. The militia group is close to Iran, which has had a troubled relationship with the U.S. PMF is also on the U.S. terrorist organization list. Our policy is to support forces with and under the direct control of the government of Iraq, said U.S. Army Colonel Steve Warren. He is a spokesman for the coalition's operations against IS. The alleged chemical attack may increase pressure to move against IS forces in Bashir. Freeing the village from IS will only take a few hours, said Lieutenant General Anwar Hamad Amin. He is commander of the Iraqi Air Force. But he told VOA, there needs to be coordination with forces on the ground first. And that will not be easy, according to Michael Knights, a Washington Institute expert on the region. If a friendly fire incident happened and coalition airstrikes killed Shia PMF, there is a concern among the Shia PMF leaders and the coalition that extremists would retaliate against coalition trainers and embassies, Knights said. I'm Bruce Alpert.
Refugees from the Middle East who have recently entered Greece say Turkish police and Coast Guard members are dealing with them more forcefully. They say Turkish officials are trying to stop people from crossing the Aegean Sea. Mario Ritter has more.
The refugees say the Turkish authorities have attacked them on beaches to try to stop them from entering smugglers' boats, or as they travel by sea. Some Syrian refugees also have accused Turkey of returning them to Syria. In December, refugees said several hundred of them were held at a detention center 2 hours from Istanbul. They said they were then brought to the border on buses and forced to cross back into Syria. On Friday, European Union and Turkish leaders agreed to return refugees from the Middle East and migrants from Africa to Turkey after they land in Greece. In exchange, the EU will give Turkey an additional $3.4 billion to help the country pay for dealing with the crisis. The EU also agreed to let as many as 72,000 of the estimated 2.7 million Syrian refugees now in Turkey move to EU countries. Rights groups have condemned the deal. They say it violates both EU human rights legislation and international laws. After the agreement was announced, the rights group Amnesty International released a statement. It said, Turkey is not a safe country for refugees and migrants, and any return process predicated on it, as being so, will be flawed, illegal, and immoral. An increase in violence by members of the Turkish Coast Guard or police will likely mean rights groups will ask European courts to cancel the deal. Some rights groups have already threatened to do so. Last month, Amnesty International released a report that said Turkish security forces had shot and wounded civilians. The report said those injured included children who were trying to flee Syria by entering Turkey. The rights group said Turkey had left thousands of civilians trapped in northern Syria. The civilians had fled their homes during attacks by forces loyal to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. Those forces were being supported by Russia. Amnesty International said Turkey's highly selective practice is appalling. Only severely injured people are allowed entry to seek medical treatment. Turkey has said that it is open to Syrian refugees fleeing conflict, but its border with Syria has been closed to civilians for more than a year. If anyone wants to enter, they must pay criminals who will smuggle them in. There have been many reports of Turkish border guards shooting at civilians trying to cross into Turkey. In May 2015, VOA reported on claims by Syrian civilians that they had been shot at by Turkish guards near the town of Kilis. The guards were reportedly trying to stop the refugees from entering a tunnel that goes under the border fence. Human Rights Watch has also accused Turkey of pushing back Syrians as they try to enter the country. In November, the rights group released a report on the situation. It said, Syrians describe Turkish border guards stopping them at or near the border, in some cases beating them and pushing them and dozens of others back into Syria or detaining and then summarily expelling them along with hundreds of others. I'm Mario Ritter.
Hundreds of mostly Syrian migrants entered Greece Sunday after the European Union and Turkey reached an agreement to return them to Turkey. Anna Mateo has the report.
Witnesses said almost 900 refugees, including Syrians, Iraqis, and Afghans, entered four islands in the Aegean Sea. Officials confirmed that two men were found dead and two girls drowned off the Greek island of Rhodes. On Friday, the EU and Turkey agreed that all migrants, including Syrians, entering Greece by sea from Turkey after Sunday will be returned. However, they will need to register and be permitted to ask for asylum. But officials say the return process will not be in place until April 4th. And they say it will not begin until EU countries send almost 4,000 workers, including judges, interpreters, and guards, to deal with the migrants' requests for asylum. In the agreement, the EU said it would give Turkey $6.6 billion in aid to help Turkey deal with the 2.5 million refugees now in the country. Earlier rules will be used to decide what will happen to the migrants who entered Greece before Sunday morning. Those rules permit one Syrian to be settled in a European country for each migrant who is returned to Turkey. I'm Anna Mateo.
This is What's Trending Today. On Monday, Twitter turned 10. The 140-character messaging service launched on March 21, 2006. Since then, Twitter has become a global communication tool with 320 million users. It all began with a simple tweet from Twitter founder Jack Dorsey. On the afternoon of March 21st, he posted, "Just setting up my Twitter." Some of the biggest news events in the past 10 years broke first on Twitter. The first report of the U.S. raid that killed Osama bin Laden came from a Pakistani man's tweet. And the first photo of an American airplane that landed in New York's Hudson River was posted on Twitter. The pro-democracy Arab Spring protests played out and spread on Twitter, and the Black Lives Matter movement gained strength through the social media site. Today, Twitter users are showing their gratitude for the past 10 years with the hashtag #LoveTwitter. The idea for a hashtag came more than a year after Twitter's creation. On August 23, 2007, Chris Messina suggested the idea of using the pound symbol to organize tweets. Twitter started using the hashtag feature in 2009. The hashtag made Twitter a more powerful platform for activists and a popular tool for breaking news. The most commonly used hashtag is FF, which stands for Follow Fridays. Twitter user Micah Baldwin proposed hashtag FF in a tweet back in January of 2009. The idea of a retweet function also came from a Twitter user. Eric Rice posted the world's first retweet on April 17, 2007. Twitter users soon began copying tweets with an RT at the beginning of the post. Retweeting became a feature on Twitter more than 2 years later, in November 2009. The most retweeted post of the past 10 years is comedian Ellen DeGeneres's Oscar selfie. DeGeneres took the famous selfie during the 2014 Academy Awards. It received more than 2 million retweets. Twitter may need some more great ideas from its users to survive the next 10 years. Observers are questioning the company's future. Despite its worldwide popularity, Twitter has yet to find a way to make money. It has also been criticized for being slow to control hate speech. And for the first time ever, the number of Twitter users went down during the last quarter. The company reported it lost 2 million users during the last months of 2015. The problems led Twitter's founder, Jack Dorsey, to return to the company. Last year, the company said it was considering removing Twitter's famous 140-character limit, but Dorsey said earlier this month that the limit would remain. And that's what's trending today.
What can technology do to make your world better? Four young people are starting new businesses to answer that question. Jill Robbins has the story.
18-year-old Mateusz Mak was the youngest person in Poland to receive money from investors to expand his company. He started Five, a mobile messaging application, or app, for deaf people. The app lets deaf people create their own hand signs to communicate with friends. The app now has more than 10,000 deaf users, and Mach thinks there will be about 150,000 more deaf users in the U.S. next year. There are many different sign languages in various parts of the world. Mach will be working with the United Nations in New York. The UN offered to support the next version of Five, which is designed with the U.S. sign language in mind. Mach will be studying economics in the next few years, but he will continue to work with new technology. He says, "I love to create, and I think that the creation of things will be my passion to the end of my life." Ida Tin was born in Copenhagen, Denmark. She is the founder of Clue, a health company for women in Berlin, Germany. Tin started researching choices for birth control when she was in her 20s. She had problems caused by taking birth control pills. She learned that birth control has not changed much since the 1960s. So she decided to work on making it easier for women to plan when they have children. Another name for the use of birth control is family planning. she made an easy-to-use app called Clue to give women information on their monthly cycles. Clue is a menstruation and health tracking app. It informs users when they are most or least likely to become pregnant. The app is available in 10 languages for Android, iOS, and iWatch platforms. Clue already boasts more than 2 million users in over 180 countries. William Zhou is the co-founder and leader of Chalk.com. The education software company helps teachers from the kindergarten level to 12th grade, or the end of secondary school. Zhou was born in Beijing, China. He grew up in the Canadian city of Vancouver and founded his first company when he was still in high school. Zhou sold the company when he was studying computer science at Canada's University of Waterloo. But he strongly wanted to make a change in education. From his dorm room, Zhou created Chalk. It is a group of programs that supports individual teaching and learning. Based in Canada, Chalk is now used in 20,000 schools by more than 100,000 users worldwide. Forbes magazine included Zhou in its list of top 30 under 30-year-old business leaders for education in 2015. Zhou says building startups is a difficult process because it could last years. It's only worth it if you find something you truly care about, something you're passionate about. Otherwise, you may just end up crashing. George Ntamanji was born in the African country of Tanzania. Ntamanji moved with his family to Italy in 2002, where he attended the Technical Institute of Alfredo Ferrari in Maranello. There, he learned about renewable energy and began thinking that solar energy would be easier to use in Africa than in Europe. After graduation, Ntamanji worked as a technician for a Swiss photovoltaic company. He returned to Tanzania in 2014 to start his own solar energy company, Sunsweet Solar, in partnership with his friend Manuel Rolando. He explains that he could not understand why, in a place with bright sunshine, more than 90% of people had no access to electricity. So when I returned to Italy, I spoke with Manuel on the huge electricity demand in Tanzania and to the possibility to open a business there. Sunsweet Solar found early success in rural areas of Tanzania. Since then, the company has expanded to Zambia. Ntamanji wants to open a factory to make solar technology in Tanzania. He hopes to create jobs and help build his country in the process. He understands the process will take time, but I think we are on the right path. In 2015, the team won the Anzisha Prize as one of the 12 best companies out of 500 led by young people under 22 in Africa, according to the African Leadership Academy.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.